Welcome to the Codcast. I'm Bruce Moll from Commonwealth Magazine, and I'm joined by Evan Horowitz, the Executive Director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Evan is extremely talented at taking complex subjects and explaining them in ways we can all understand. Today, we're putting him to the test, asking him to explain the derailment of a state commission tasked with straightening out the state's unemployment insurance system. Evan, welcome to the Codcast.
Bruce, it's great to be here. You set a high bar for me, but I'll try to hurdle it.
I know you can. Let's start with some basics on this subject. What does the unemployment insurance system do?
So this is an 80-year-old system, you know, it goes kind of a New Deal era system. And the idea is sometimes you lose a job through no fault of your own. That's a huge challenge for people and their family budgets. So to guard against this kind of challenge, people pay into the system, or businesses pay into the system, so that when you lose your job, you can get some of your wages back, even as you look for a new job. So that's the idea. Protect people after they lose a job through no fault of their own, so they get some kind of income to weather the challenges of being unemployed and find a new job.
And you mentioned assessments on businesses. So this is what businesses would say is a tax on them to pay for this process.
So this is you get right into the complicated stuff, Bruce. If you've taken half a second, we get into the really nitty-gritty economic theory right away. So this is one of these questions, who's actually paying in? Because obviously I'm the worker, I lose my job, I apply, I get the check. Who pay the money in? So officially, yes, businesses sign checks and send it to the state. They are taxed. Economists will tell you though that actually it comes out of workers' paychecks, right? The businesses know when they hire someone, oh, I hired this person, I'm gonna have a tax that I have to pay the state for unemployment insurance. I'll just lower their salary a little bit and I'll use that extra to pay the tax. So there's a separate question, is like, who writes the check? And yes, businesses write the checks to pay into the system. But most economists think, no, the money really comes from workers.
Interesting. Okay. And what happened to this system during COVID?
So as you can imagine, this system is heavily, heavily burdened during a recession, right? Like at times when lots and lots of workers lose jobs, then lots and lots of unemployment checks have to go out and businesses would have to pay for those at a time when the economy is really bad. So this is a major problem, but the fix for it is we fund it in advance. When times are good, we fill up a savings account so that when times are bad, we can pay out unemployment insurance claims from the savings account, called the trust fund. So we fill up this trust fund when times are good. Then when times are bad, we're not asking businesses to pay additional taxes when they're already struggling to sell their products or find consumers or hire or whatever it is. So COVID was one of these times. You know, the economy collapsed in a matter of months. And Massachusetts had a very small trust fund, unfortunately. And so what we had to do is we ran through that trust fund pretty quickly. And then we had to keep paying unemployment benefits. So we borrowed money. And that's what you do. You run a deficit. You keep borrowing money. People can still get these benefits. We don't say, oh, we ran out of money. We can't pay unemployment insurance benefits anymore. I'm sorry. We're out. We say, no, here, please take more money. We're going to borrow and we'll pay it back later. And that's what happened. We had to borrow a lot of money. We ran out of money in the trust fund. And probably that's because COVID was a uniquely bad recession, at least at the onset. And probably was because we never did a good job of filling up the trust fund, even when times were good.
So I remember reading that we had to borrow a lot of money, and there was uncertainty about it for a time about how much money was actually in the trust fund, because there used to be reporting every month, and then all of a sudden the Baker administration stopped and didn't report for a long time. And I remember even becoming convinced a state legislator was raising questions about maybe we're all good. Maybe we have enough money in there. What was going on with all that for a while?
Yeah. So I think there were early estimates that, wow, the trust fund really is depleted and we've had to borrow billions, or we're going to have to borrow billions upon billions of dollars and we'll have to pay it back. And then there was, as you say, all these questions about like, wait a minute, this should be easy to figure out. Like, yes, there are projections. How much are we going to have to borrow in a year? But then there are also like monthly accounting. How much should we send out? How much should we take in? What's the difference? And the state stopped producing this monthly or quarterly accounting for reasons that have never been well explained, except for the fact that the pandemic introduced some new complexity to the system. The federal government introduced a new rule, so it made some things more complicated. But should it, They should not have stopped the accounting. The accounting should have continued. And then it became, I mean, I say pretty clear to me, but it's never, I think, been fully acknowledged that then people start to realize, actually, we didn't borrow that as much as we said we were going to. We weren't as depleted as we said. Let's, before we come out and tell everybody that, let's really nail down the numbers. So then there was this process of like, let's really nail down the numbers where we come out and admit that actually we didn't spend as much as we thought, or we're not going to spend as much as we thought. And then eventually they did come forward and say, actually, we don't need to borrow as much as we thought we were going to have to. We still have to do some borrowing, but it's not the sort of the dire level that we expected.
So if I recall, the possibility was that we might have to borrow $7 billion, but what we're going to do now is roughly around $2.6 billion. Is that correct?
So there was a law passed to enable the borrowing, and $7 billion was the upper limit on the law. Like, it was going to give the administration the ability to borrow $7 billion. I think most of us involved in this world didn't think the state was going to need $7 billion ever. But I personally will say, I thought the state was going to need somewhere between $4 and $5 billion. It looks like the state doesn't need that either. It needs somewhere between $2 and $3 billion. And that's not just to get the trust fund back to zero. That's to get the trust fund into a relatively healthy state. So back to zero plus some cushion from that borrowing.
And I think at this point, there was a commission set up, which you were a member of. Tell me about what prompted that, because that's been going on for a while as well. Was that prompted by COVID, or was it separate and apart from that?
So it was prompted by COVID, but it was meant to deal with broader issues. So there were the short-term problems and there were the long-term problems. And the short-term problem was, COVID is really burdening this unemployment insurance system. What are we going to do? How much do we need to bond? Stuff that we've been talking about. Then there was the long-term problem, like, wait a minute, why was the trust fund so poorly funded beforehand? And how do we stop that from happening again? And we know this isn't going to be the last recession, so maybe we fix those underlying problems and get to a system that works, where we put enough money in so that when the economy does struggle, we have enough money to pay out to people who lose their jobs through no fault of their own, right? You want to have this money set aside. So that the commission was really focused on the longer term stuff. What has gone wrong that we're underfunding the system, and how do we fix it?
So those are great questions. What did go wrong? Why do you feel it wasn't up to handling this COVID crisis?
So there are a bunch of, often with systemic failures, right? There are a bunch of things that go wrong, and they go wrong together in complicated ways. And some of it is economics and some of it is politics, and I can try to separate it. On the politics side, I mean, the state has a system where when the trust fund gets low, tax rates are automatically supposed to go up. I mean, it's just written into statute, like, when you have this much, tax rates should be a little bit higher. They should be this level. They should be that level, enough to refill the trust fund. And it never happened. For 15 years, it never happened. The trust fund was low, but legislators stepped in to say, you know what, let's not raise taxes. Now's not a great time to raise these tax rates. So, well, we won't do that this year. And then the next year they come back and say, no, you know what, it's still not a great time to raise these taxes. Let's not do it this year either. And they just never did it. So the tax rates on businesses were always under the appropriate levels because of continuous political intervention. And that's because of continuous lobbying, right? People saying, now it's not a great time to raise our taxes. It's going to increase business costs. Businesses aren't secure right now. And to be honest, there are times when that's right. Like, one of the times when the rates were supposed to go up was right at the tail end of the Great Recession. So 2010, 2011. And this was not a good time to raise taxes. So sometimes it does make sense to say, like, listen, businesses are not healthy enough right now to do this. But then by 2013, 2014, 2015, yeah, we needed to raise those taxes, and that didn't happen. So that's the political side of it. The technical side of it is, to fund the system, it's not a tax on all of your wages. Say you have an employee, your business, you have an employee, that employee makes $100,000. You don't pay a tax on the $100,000. You pay a tax on the first $15,000. And that number is not adjusted for inflation. It's just the amount you pay year after year. So you're always paying on the first $15,000. And that means even as wages go up, so the next year that person gets a raise, I'm paying them $105,000. It's a big raise. I'm being very generous. I'm still only paying taxes on the first $15,000. So there's this challenge where, like, my taxes or the business taxes aren't keeping up with wages. But guess what is keeping up with wages? Benefits. So I'm a worker. When I lose my job, I get roughly 50% of my wages, up to a cap, but like roughly half my wages from unemployment insurance. And if my wages go up, so do my benefits. So the benefits are indexed. They keep going up with wages and the taxes aren't. And as you can imagine, you put these things together, the benefits go up with wages and the taxes don't. And you end up with this widening gap. And that's sort of the technical side of what was happening.
So the commission was formed to sort of figure out how can we address these somewhat political and economic questions that were plaguing the state's unemployment insurance trust fund, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that explains also the makeup of the commission, which included a lot of kind of political players, kind of lobbyists who are involved in this process, the political side of the process, like, hey, don't raise taxes now. And then some folks like me, you know, I'm not a lobbyist, I'm a researcher, to you know, think about sort of more the technical aspects of it.
So I know I even listened to a few commission meetings, but I think you had 11 or so meetings over the course of a period of time, gathered a lot of information. Tell us about how that process worked and sort of where, you know, I know it was held up for a while you couldn't figure out what was in the trust fund, how much was in there. But I think over the last 4 or 5 months, that picture's become clear, right? And so tell us what happened with this commission.
So I'll say first, it was a fascinating experience for me. This is the first time I've been on a legislative commission. So I was learning and, you know, spending time with some thoughtful folks talking about complicated issues. That part of it was kind of fascinating and fun. And a number of dynamics played out that I sort of didn't anticipate, but that proved kind of massively consequential in terms of, I mean, maybe you should start by saying, like, at the end of this, we did not reach a consensus. Like, it's worth saying the end of the story to get a sense for like why the story itself is like, we had our final, not quite final meeting, but like voting meeting last week. And there was a 2/3 threshold for recommendations and we didn't meet it. So the end of this year-long process and all these meetings is we do not have a consensus report. We don't have consensus recommendations to report back to the legislature and say, here's how to fix it. Now, just so that's what the end point is, and that's what the dynamics are going to, but I think it makes the dynamics more interesting to think about, like, actually, it weren't just things that were swirling, there were things that ended up derailing the process. So one of them was the kind of interaction between the short-term and the long-term stuff that we talked about before. So we're this commission, we're supposed to be focusing on long-term things, but all these short-term things keep like erupting, you know, and affecting our deliberations. And so as an example, there was a technical glitch early on with the way unemployment insurance stuff was charged. It's technical, but nobody saw it coming. And suddenly businesses got these huge bills in early 2021 that they didn't anticipate. And of course, when you have a committee meeting with business lobbyists and representatives that's supposed to focus on long-term stuff, meanwhile, all their members are getting these like surprisingly large UI bills, that's all you're gonna talk about. And that's all we talked about, you know, for a meeting. And, you know, it was a big deal and it was a surprising thing. And it was a thing that I'm embarrassed to say I didn't see coming, but, you know, should have. So that just shows up and hijacks, you know, a meeting or two. And then there was all this stuff about the balance. Like, well, is the trust fund really insolvent and how insolvent? And do we really need to bond, you know, $7 billion or is it $3 billion? And again, this is not really germane to the long-term discussion, but it's what people are thinking about, it's what people care about. And so that hijacks a couple of meetings. And it was very hard to stay focused on the long-term stuff with all the short-term interruptions. So I think that's kind of one dynamic. I'll talk about others, but I'll just give you a chance.
Keep going. I'm with you so far.
Okay, good. So that's one of them. Another is that, like, when you invite political representatives into a commission like that, you're going to get political dynamics. So all of these meetings are public. So people are very much like on display, right? We're being recorded. They were remote. They're available. So if you're a business lobbyist and you show up at one of these meetings, you're in character, right? You are in your professional role as a business lobbyist. Same if you're a labor representative, you are in character. You're not going to break. You're not going to say, well, it's true that, you know, my constituents think that, but no, you're going to stand for your thing. So there's a lot of political posturing at every meeting. And this gets in the way of discussion. We're supposed to be talking about, it doesn't matter, thing X. But if the thing X is not popular with, you know, one of these political groups, the labor side or the business side, then the representatives are going to step in and say, let me talk about this other thing. Let me show you, let me put on my lobbying hat and you know, talk about this other way of thinking. So in some ways, like the ultimate vote was totally predictable from the makeup of the commission, because, you know, a lot of these people, you know, have a particular viewpoint that they're representatives rather than kind of independent thinkers. So their votes represent their constituency as much as it represents their way of thinking about this particular problem. And I mentioned the like public nature of this, because I think that's part of the dynamic. If we could close the doors and turn off the video cameras and say, all right, well, we really need to get to consensus. How do we do that? What I'm willing to give a little here, if you'll give a little there, if you'll accept this change, we'll make that change. Then I think we really weren't far from consensus. We could have gotten there, but you can't do that. As a legislative commission, we have to have open sessions. We have to, as part of open meeting laws, we have to alert people whenever we have discussions. Like, we couldn't even go out to a bar afterwards and try to do this. That would violate the rules. So you have this dynamic where people are in character and they're caught up on short-term things, and everything happens publicly. And this makes, you know, horse trading impossible. It just makes it impossible. You can't even figure out where other people's red lines are. You can't have an honest, like, wait a minute, are you saying this because you think it's strategically valuable to say it? Like, I'll say it and make my point sound stronger. Are you saying it because you really believe it? And if you don't really believe it, maybe we can have a discussion about, like, all right, let's change that a little bit. But you can't even ask that question. There's no, everything's too public.
In the buildup to the commission and sort of all that, it seemed like there were a couple simple fundamental things you brought up. You know, this issue of, well, if the fund is at this level, you need to raise the rates. Or if it's too high, maybe you lower the rates or you adjust it. But no, we turn it over to the legislature, to they can step in and say, no, now is not the time. Was this one of the issues that the commission was struggling with, whether you should take the legislature out of it or what?
So that didn't come up as much as it should have. The sort of, how do we make this automatic and get the politics out of this system? Otherwise they're going to step in and block it. And I think partly that didn't come up a lot because there isn't a clear way to do it. It was already automatic and already being blocked. And yeah, it would be nice if that weren't true, but the political dynamics are such that it will be very hard, I think, to kind of evade that. So that didn't come up as much, but I do think there were other kind of technically straightforward things that had to happen and that didn't happen. The fact that like you only pay tax on the first 15,000 and it doesn't change. Like, that's something you could fix pretty easily. At least from a technical perspective, pretty easily. You pay taxes on, you know, the first 50,000 or 70,000 or all, you could, on everything. And then you index it. So it's the first 50,000, but then next year it's 52,000 and the year after 54,000, just to keep up with inflation. And that more or less fixes like the biggest part of this problem. Now, I guess there's an objection that came up a lot to that, which is, oh, but it's a tax hike. I used to be paying 15,000 on the first 50, now I'm paying on the first 50. But it became, I hope it became clear, because it's not a tax hike in the sense that you just changed the rates. So, you know, if I'm paying a 10% rate on the first 15,000, that now I'm not, that's way too high, but just for illustrative purposes, 10% rate on the first 15,000, I may pay a 5% rate on the first 30,000 or a 2.5% rate on the first 60,000, whatever it is. You can just adjust the rates and then it's not a tax hike, and that still fixes the problem, because the problem is is it growing as fast as the benefits are growing? They just have to grow at the same rate. So I think of this as a kind of sine qua non of a successful solution. Like, this is a necessary part of any package to fix UI. And I don't see how you fix UI without it, but I also don't see what the problem is with it, really. But no, we couldn't get consensus on it. It's true, I will say. I do see one possible objection. Some businesses will pay more, some will pay less, right? Like, it won't be a tax hike across the board, but it turns out that it does differentially benefit lower wage businesses relative to higher wage businesses. So you can imagine that. But even that, I don't know, in very small ways, not in very big ways, in ways that should have been, I think, possible to overcome.
Okay. So let me ask you another broader question about the fund. And it popped up with me when we weren't getting very good information about what was in the fund. And so then it became known that there was I forget the exact number, $2+ billion in the fund, but we owed the federal government a lot of money because we had borrowed money from them. We pumped $500 million of our federal relief funds in to sort of reduce the amount. And then we needed money, theoretically the bond money, to get us back to where we should be. Where should we be? Was there consensus about that?
So actually, this is one of the very few things around which the commission reached consensus, which is that there is and it's funny that it was even kind of a vote. There's a federal standard about what it should be. And, you know, it's technical, but it's like a level that is big enough to deal with a normal size recession. But that's sort of the standard. You should have enough money in your trust fund such that if you hit a normal size recession, you don't go to zero. That's the standard. And the federal government basically mandates it. And the commission did say, yeah, that's a totally reasonable standard. That's the reasonable standard. And so it's not a fixed amount of money. I can't say like it's $2 billion, but it's like that. It's, you know, it's $2 to $3 billion or something like that. But it varies over time, depending on what your benefit structure looks like. And also how large your recent recessions are. Because like what counts as a normal recession depends, nobody can see me doing my air quotes with my fingers, but what counts as a normal in air quotes recession, is gauged by looking at recent recessions.
So during that period where it was unclear what was in the fund, I often wondered, so in COVID, we had a lot of people out of work and a lot of demands on the fund. And there was this perception, oh, it could be $7 billion we need or whatever. But then we hit a period where people were desperate for workers and eager to hire them. And so there wasn't a lot of layoffs going on. So in my mind, I was thinking, okay, these payments are coming in now and they're not going to go down. They're going to go up. So I often wonder, we're going to borrow a big chunk of money to put into the fund. I think some lawmakers are wanting to help business some more by putting even more money into the fund. And all at a time, at least right now, recession could come any moment, but right now there's this hunger for workers. So the fund should be growing fairly strongly. Shouldn't have a lot of people sapping of it right now. So I just wonder, it seems like sort of imperfect about, we've got all this concern about putting money in to reduce how much business has to put in, but it seems like maybe there's too much incentive to ease the burden on business.
This is a hard question to answer, right? But because it depends on kind of politics and how you think. And also it's related to the question we talked about earlier, where actually I think this money is actually coming out of workers. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, but it actually comes out of salaries, not out of, you know, business profits. But it's definitely the case that we're in a much more kind of normalized situation right now. The labor market is healthy, which means that, yeah, the fund is not going to experience significant drawdowns right now unless we enter a new recession. So we should be able to build up some kind of reserves at the moment, with, as long as we are in the appropriate, you know, schedule in the tax structure, and that varies year by year. So I think that's right, in a sense that like the basic pattern we have right now is, let's borrow some money. We'll borrow it not just to get to zero, but to get the trust fund to the point where it is healthy. There's some cushion in case things go wrong. Then let's see what the current tax system is doing. Is it slowly depleting? Is it slowly increasing the amount in the trust fund? And one reason I say this is, we really didn't fix the $15,000 problem. Right. And at the same time, wages are rising really fast. And if wages are rising really fast, like all over the economy, that means benefits are going to be rising. So the system does have this current challenge where benefits are going up because wages are going up, and taxes, again, are not really going up because rates aren't going up. And there's this $15,000 problem, called the taxable wage base. So it's not totally clear to me what will be happening if we just allow things to play out. Is this going to slowly be depleting or slowly be increasing the amount of the trust fund? But it should be relatively stable for now. And I think you're right to say, like, well, if it's relatively stable and we've refilled it, what's the urgency? Why don't we watch, see what happens, see if we can make these longer term things? Why would we put more money in now? And I think that's right. I don't know what the urgency to add additional state money is right now. Businesses will pay back the bonds. The state is not paying back the bonds. And that's a key thing to think of. So the state does the borrowing, but does the borrowing basically on behalf of businesses. So this, the, you know, $2.5-3 billion that the state is borrowing will get paid back, but it'll get paid back by businesses in the form of a new tax, basically. So they aren't excited about paying, you know, that new tax. So you can see why they're pushing for it. But no, I don't think there's a kind of urgent need for the state to be coming in to save them from this new tax. Because again, the point is, like, businesses, whatever condition they're in now, they underpaid for years because the state never raised the rates as they were supposed to. So anything that's happening now to refill the fund is to make up for underpayments, you know, a decade of underpayments at least.
So last question though, if I understood correctly, if the state borrows the money on behalf of business, as you put it, puts in $2.6 billion, and that would be in the fall, presumably. That's been talked about when this might happen. Meanwhile, the fund should be collecting from business as well. So you could see, I don't really know how fast it collects money, but you could see when all this is done in the fall, it could be around $3 billion, perhaps.
And well, it's still paying out. I don't know. I don't know that it's accruing money that fast. But it could be different than 2.6 for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how fast it accrues. I don't know how fast it goes in. But so I guess the idea is then we'll be in a sweet spot. But we haven't fixed, if I understand you correctly, the commission hasn't addressed any of the longer term problems, particularly if a recession hits or we have a cushion, but we haven't dealt with the longer term problem that you were hoping to do when this commission was launched.
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, the longer term problem is going to become a short and medium term problem. And it's connected to what you were just saying. Like, is the fund going to be accruing money in a substantial way now? Because yes, businesses are paying in and no, there isn't a lot of unemployment, but we were never filling it up fast enough, even when businesses were paying in and there wasn't a lot of unemployment in, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018. The fund was growing, but not growing fast enough to get us to a healthy place. So presumably we're still not going to be growing fast enough to keep us in a healthy place because that's just not the setup that we have. And since we haven't fixed anything, there's no reason to think we're gonna have a different outcome. The economics and the politics suggest we're gonna be in the same place, which is to say we'll be underfunding moving forward because we weren't able to agree on changes. Now, I should say, even if the commission agreed on changes, like, we don't have any legislative authority. We weren't going to pass laws. It wouldn't be enacted just because we had a report. The legislature still has to make these changes. And they still could. They could just say, well, it's true, the commission didn't do it, but who cares about the commission? We know what the right thing to do is, and we're going to do it. And that's still possible. I mean, if you look at the two legislative representatives who led the commission, that's Rep. Cutler, Josh Cutler, and Senator Pat Jalin, they both voted for a package of proposals. Like, they didn't split, even though the commission split along certain lines. So there's legislative support for the package of proposals that they put forward, which includes things like, yeah, changing the $15,000 thing and indexing it and lowering rates, like, well, as we talked about.
Got it. All right. Well, I have to say you passed your test very well. You explained it very simply, and it's easy to understand. It's too bad it's not easy to fix, but it's easier to understand thanks to you.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it would be great if we lived in a world where a lot of things were easier to fix, but that's just, it's not the nature of politics.
So again, Evan Horowitz of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University, thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime, Bruce. It's great to be able to come on and talk.
And to our listeners, we'll see you again next week. Thank you.